Today on Movie Rollers, we talk about The Housemaid and Ella McKay. It's time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And yes, D as well.
Movie Rollers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you.
And we can see your ears for the first time on the show.
I know. In fact, I've got to apologise in advance in case our audio isn't quite right, because I'm trying a new setup today. I've given us all, as if they came out of nowhere.
Yes.
I've given us all clip mics, so that, A, gets rid of some of the clutter.
Yes.
So that we're clutter-free, but more to the point, because the two of you are so commensurately unprofessional and refuse to speak directly into your microphones, I have to take matters into my own hands.
I do like that.
So, again, if I haven't quite got the audio right on this podcast, I apologise. Hopefully you can hear us fine as before.
It's better living through technology. I'm all for it.
Yeah.
All right. We are here today to discuss two movies.
Yep.
This is the first two movie podcast, by the way, in something like 10. It's been so crazy.
It's
been bonkers.
Yeah. And that's just the ones that we're reviewing. There are tons that we've been watching in the background as well.
Yes.
Which you'll probably hear about in our top 10 review.
You should talk about the San Diego Film Critics Society Awards.
Sure.
You've got a minute, because the two of you are both members of San Diego Film Critics Society.
We are proud members.
You guys all voted.
Yes, we did on Monday. This Monday, yeah.
And I think I can very, very happily live with our choices. I mean, I think the San Diego Film Critics Society has always, they've always kind of been known for picking kind of unusual films and awarding unusual, having unusual nominations and having unusual picks. And I think we did okay. I think, I've been reading, once the San Diego Film Critics Society Awards were published, I've been reading people commenting on it, and everybody is very happy that, one battle after another, and Marty Supreme and the usual movies were being named, and then people had kind of forgotten about Sinners. And San Diego Film Critics Society is one of the few, big city film societies which has, placed a lot of love on Sinners, which I think, honestly, if Sinners was released in December, that's all people would be talking about.
Correct.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that
not only gave it Best Picture with runner-up as One Battle After Another, but we also gave Ryan Coogler, who was the director, Best Director, with Yorgos Lanthimos for Begonia as a runner-up.
And we also gave Michael B. Jordan best male actor for Sinners.
Fantastic. Yep, and we gave...
Beating a lot of competition.
Yep, we gave Joel Egerton Best Runner-Up for Train Dreams.
Fantastic.
I'll just do the top
so,
five if you want.
I was going to say, where can we find the SDFCS awards
on
online?
On sdfcs.org.
Perfect.
And you'll find the entire list of winners and runners-up and
members
such like.
And everything.
Members, yeah. So Yasdi and I are both members.
I will make sure I put a link to that in the show notes.
Yep.
But it's right there on the homepage. I can see it. The 2025.
It is.
Super.
Yep.
But yeah, were you going to read like the top?
Yeah, I'll just do the best. Best actress we gave.
The best of the best.
Yeah, best of the best. Best actress. Winner was Jessie Buckley for Hamnet and Rose Byrne.
It was a tie.
It's a tie. If I Had Legs, I'd Kick You. And then best supporting, we gave Stellan Skarsgård Sentimental Value. Runner-up was Sean Penn for One Battle After Another. Best supporting actress was Amy Madigan. Again, a kind of off-the-cuff, I would say.
Pick
for Weapons. And then runners-up was also a tie with Nina Hoss for Hedda and Wunmi Mosaka for Sinners. So Sinners got a lot of love from San Diego film critics. I think it was a winner-winner chicken dinner.
Sinner. I'm not unhappy with that list at all.
Yeah, it's a great list.
Great, yeah.
And you've heard Yazdi and I, Joe, talk about many of these films throughout the year. So I think...
Yeah. The only other thing I would mention is that Rashmi and I have been championing foreign films a lot.
Yes.
And I'm really proud that the San Diego Film Critics Society gave their best original screenplay yes. to a foreign film, which is the movie from Iran. But it's actually been submitted by France for the Oscars, but it's an Iranian movie. It was just an accident, which is very unusual to give a screenplay award to a foreign yes. film.
Yeah. And Yassi and I did the review of it a couple of podcasts ago.
Yeah.
About three or four podcasts ago. So again, and we gave Black Bag runner-up. Remember Black Bag from the beginning of
that
the year?
Really early. That was like February, cool, wasn't it, I think?
Very cool.
Steven Soderbergh.
Steven Soderbergh. Tight, stylish thriller.
Spy movie. Yeah,
yeah, so good. Yeah.
Terrific stuff. All right. Well, let's, again, sdfcs.org to check out the full list. I'll put a link in the show notes and you can see how well we did. It is award season. So one of the great things about, you know, what you do on the SDFCS is that these movies that you've picked start to gain momentum correct. As we build up to the bigger awards like the Oscars and stuff. So really cool. I think it's a great list. Really good list. All right. We also have time today because we are only covering two movies and it's the only podcast we're recording today.
Yes.
To do our usual segment of I can't find anything to watch on video on demand. So
especially poignant because the holidays are upon us and you might be looking for things to watch with your families as you kick back and relax for the holiday season.
Or if you're in the back of a plane traveling to see your family and you need something to watch on the plane, go on.
No. There is a ton of stuff that is out right now. And if you've been busy like us throughout the year and you've got a chance to catch up over the holidays, don't forget on our website now, whenever we do a Netflix pick, I try and put it in the show notes. So if you can't remember some of our picks from podcasts past, you can go check us out on the website. I usually try and list at least the name of the movie there, if not just a few words. So all the picks from this year are there, but there's more. So what else have you guys got to recommend this week?
So I'm going to start. So I am going to recommend the movie Relay. This was a movie that the three of us got to watch at Tribeca Film Festival earlier in the year.
Awesome.
Came out straight on Netflix. And
I'm sorry, I have to interrupt. The cast was there and the director was there and Riz Ahmed was there and Lily James was there. It was quite an experience.
Yes. So thank you. So starring Riz Ahmed, Lily James, Sam Worthington, a whole bunch of others. This is a great thriller. This is really cat and mouse, mouse and cat. It's, you know, the description is when a woman uncovers a deadly biotech secret. She turns to a secure accessibility service to reach a fixer who's known for helping whistleblowers in trouble. And I'll leave it at that because the less you know, the better. But great movie. It's about 2 hours, but it's 2 hours well spent. And it's filmed in the dark in New York. It's very cool.
Awesome.
It's so sturdy. It's the kind of old-fashioned, sturdy thrillers which don't get made anymore. It's just... Yeah. It's a treat. There's nobody I would not recommend this to. There's nothing objectionable to the content, I believe.
No, it was super fun. I enjoyed this too. And we did talk about it in our coverage of the film festival. But, there's always something special about watching a movie in a film festival that kind of adds a point or two. I think this movie would have reviewed well by us outside of the context of the film. It's a fun, compact little thriller. And I kind of feel disappointed that it got lost. In the shuffle through the year. I mean, that's often the case when we see something wonderful at a film festival. They either don't get the marketing right or they release it at a time against other movies and they never kind of rise up amongst all the cruft. But I think it reviewed quite well. Yes. On the Rotten Tomatoes. And so it's not a recommendation we make lightly. I think that's a great choice, Rashmi.
Thank you.
Everybody should watch Relay. Yeah. Relay.
Okay.
R-E-L-A-Y. Yazdi, what you got?
So when Knives Out came out a long time ago, it was one of my favorite films. I love that film. And then it was followed up a few years later. Rian Johnson made the follow-up, which was Glass Onion, which I also loved.
I didn't love that one as much.
I loved it.
Yeah.
And then his latest one, the third one in the series called Wake Up Dead Man, A Knives Out Mystery, is streaming on Netflix. Listen, I love these movies. These movies are never about, person X murdered this person in the bedroom. It's never like that. They're all very complicated. It has a cast of characters. People have different motivations. This one, I think, is different from the other two movies because it's set, the murder happens in a church. And Josh O'Connor plays this very, very conscientious, well-meaning priest who has been assigned to it. Oh. And Josh Brolin is the existing big guy at the church. And there's kind of a clash of wits between the two. But because it talks about the church and there's a death which happens physically in the church under impossible circumstances, right? It seems like nobody could have possibly killed this person in this particular way. And so it's a wonderful mystery. But it also allows Rian Johnson to kind of meditate on the nature of faith. So this is kind of a little darker. It's a little deeper. I really love what it has to say because, what's his name? Daniel Craig is famously, he's a Southern detective who's famously an atheist. And he, you know, he and Josh Brolin had these wonderful discussions about faith, which you wouldn't expect in a movie like this, but it was really very good. Ultimately, didn't matter what the revelation is because it's so complex and it's like playing 3D chess and, it really plays with your expectation. And, Kaylee Spaney, who we have seen.
Yeah. She was in, Priscilla Presley.
Played Priscilla Presley in it.
Very good.
Andrew Scott, who we love so much, is in this movie. Kerry Washington is here. Jeremy Renner, who we haven't seen since he had that big accident, he's in this movie. Mila Kunis is here. Kunis is here. Josh Brolin, like I said. Glenn Close is here. I'm going to nominate Glenn Close for Best Supporting Female Actor. She's so good here. And Josh O'Connor has been doing such good work here. Sorry, I'm talking too long, but I recommend Wake Up Dead Man.
Yeah, I mean, it's fun. The thing that the spectacle with these type of movies and the same with the Poirot ones is they have such an amazing cast normally that it's kind of fun to see all of these people come together, these ensembles.
Yeah.
So, Joe.
Well, first of all, I mean, just to comment on Knives Out. I mean, I'm not a fan of that series, although Glass Onion was very entertaining. I'll have to give it that. And what you've said about this one actually compels me to watch it. I like the idea. I love those kind of philosophical discussions about faith. I think they're always super interesting. So yeah, I'll check those out. My pick is courtesy of Yazdi. Thank you, Yazdi. Because I didn't have one ready going into the podcast, and Yazdi, as always, has like 10. Aww. So, Yazdi does his homework. I'm going to choose the movie Caught Stealing. Now, if you are a fan of Movie Wallahs and you've stayed up to speed with our podcasts, you will remember that around August, September time, we reviewed a movie called Caught Stealing. This movie was directed by
Darren Aronofsky.
Thank you. Darren Aronofsky, who is always a very interesting director to me, mostly hit these days rather than miss. And this is kind of Darren Aronofsky does a Coen Brothers, does a Tarantino, does an action flick. In much the same way that One Battle After Another was kind of Paul Thomas Anderson's entry into that kind of genre. So this is just a wonderful little thriller. It's outrageously violent. So yeah, not one for grandma or the kids. But it is very, very funny. It's a great little caper. It's derivative in some ways of something like a Guy Ritchie, you know, Mobland kind of caper, but it keeps you interested through excellent pacing and really some really fun setups that it has. So I really enjoyed Caught Stealing. I think it's a great Netflix pick.
It's very unpredictable, and that's what I liked. It's kind of a great ride. Like, it's classic, you know, innocent man caught at the wrong time, at the wrong place, and then he doesn't know, and suddenly, like, 100 people are out to kill him, and he doesn't know why, and he's running. It's pretty much North by Northwest, but it's so much fun. It's so much. And the lead actor, he's always very good. Brian.
And we had Zoe Kravitz in this as well. He did a good job.
And Austin Butler, yeah.
Yeah.
And Vincent D'Onofrio.
No, and the other guy, Naomi Watts' ex-husband.
Yeah, Liev Schreiber.
Liev Schreiber's very good in it.
Liev Schreiber's in it.
Yeah. That's how he's known. Naomi Watts' ex-husband. Yes. I think if you can get over the initial contention of it, then it's a great ride. I couldn't get over that initial, like, if that thing hadn't happened, we wouldn't have a movie, but that's
right.
That's fine.
Right.
But it's fine. It's a good, you know what? Austin Butler does really well in this.
And for those who love cats, there's a lot of cat in there.
I'm looking on Netflix and there's so many good movies out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Daddy-O's out.
Oh.
Remember Daddy-O?
Yeah.
Sean Penn from last year.
Dakota Johnson.
Yeah. There's some really good stuff out at the moment.
Cool.
All right.
All right. So again, let's recap the picks. Rashmi, you had
Relay on Netflix. Netflix,
Yazdi.
Wake Up Dead Man, A Knives Out Mystery, also on Netflix.
And to cap out the trio of Netflix picks this week, it's Caught Stealing, also on Netflix. And there's loads of stuff. I mean,
so much.
Again, go back through if you're struggling with like, oh, what shall I watch? Find some of our recommendations from earlier this year at moviewallahs.com.
Yeah.
All right. Time for the main event. So we are talking about The Housemaid and we are also talking about Ella McKay. Is that the order you want to take them?
I'm going to start with Ella McKay.
All right, then let's do that.
Okay. So, where to start with Ella McKay? I'll go with this. So Ella McKay is a new, loosely, I'm going to put in quote marks, comedy written and directed by Oscar and Emmy Award winner James L. Brooks. And he's known for As Good As It Gets, Terms of Endearment, Broadcast News. He's even done some of The Simpsons. And the way it goes is it says it's about the complicated politics that arise when a young woman's stressful career clashes with her chaotic family life. And this stars, it's got quite a good cast. It's got Emma Mackey as Ella McKay, Jamie Lee Curtis, Woody Harrelson, Albert Brooks, Jack Lowden, and a whole host of others. We saw this one a few weeks ago. Joe, why don't you start us off? What did you think of Ella McKay?
I mean, I'll start by saying exactly what I said to the representative from the studio who takes our comments as we walk out, which is, I think everyone's going to hate this movie, but I really liked it. And it's one of those things where I can see why this will grate on a lot of people. It's idealistic. It's sweet. The characters are somewhat unrealistic. It's got that kind of, Legally Blonde. Its politics are so liberal, you know, and so I think it's got one of those things that will rub a lot of people up the wrong way. But as a movie, it had me completely engaged from start to finish. I really enjoyed the performance of the lead. I loved the performance of the other ancillary characters. It's a very easy and very watchable movie. And yeah, you know, does it have any real grit in terms of how politics works in the real world? And, you know, is it overly idealistic? And it's got many, many problems. But as a movie, I actually had a really good time watching it. It was engaging for me.
Yes, Dee.
I love Broadcast News. It's one of my favorite movies of all time. I love As Good As It Gets. So James L. Brooks has done amazing movies, you know, in the 80s and 90s. Very seminal filmmaker. Terms of Endearment, you know, cleaned up at the Oscars. So I had very high expectations, and maybe it's a question of expectations, but this movie is just a complete disaster. I went in wanting to love this movie and sure. I 3 sentences in, I said, oh gosh, this is not a good film. This is what I wrote. This is not a good film. And I'll tell you why. So 2 things. One is I completely know what it's going for. It's going for this fairy tale world that doesn't exist. It's going for this very idealistic kind of, you know, if we lived in a dignified, kind world, this is how things would play out. We don't live in a dignified, kind world, for one thing. And the other thing is, politically, this film feels like an absolute fairy tale. Like the kinds of things which they called scandalous in this particular movie and during the Trump administration, they're laughably minor. Like, this would not even remotely be close to a scandal. So I think maybe the script is being written for a few decades. I haven't bothered to read up. Maybe in the 80s, if this or the early 90s, if this was written, maybe this would be a lot more believable. So that's one thing. And the other thing I will say is that the lead character in particular just behaves in ways which make no sense to me at all. So that's where it fell apart. Like, and I have many examples of that. She is just like, absurd. Like, why are you behaving this way? We'll talk more about it.
Rashmi. I hated this movie so much. I literally wrote down, like, Yazdi, what is the point of this movie? Who is this movie for? What is this movie about? Oh my gosh, Joe.
Yeah, no, I'm looking at the scores here. I knew everyone was going to hate this.
No, and it's horrible because I feel bad for the lead because she's acting her heart out. Mm-hmm. And Jamie Lee Curtis
is so good.
And Woody Harrelson are so wasted in this movie. But it just didn't make any sense. The story was, for me, scene to scene to scene to scene, and then it didn't really hang together as a movie. Like, I didn't get a sense of what was going on. Everyone felt like they were kind of acting, not really in the movie and just being in the movie. Everything just felt so forced. I just couldn't understand why this movie exists. Again, I think to your point, Yasti, it almost feels like it's so outdated.
It's hard. That's the word.
It's horribly
more than anything
outdated.
Else, it's outdated. It's really outdated in every way. In every way.
So,
and even like the whole Kamal Nanjiani.
What was
Nanjiani's
going on there?
In it? And what is he doing? And he's like her police escort, and just it was awful. I wanted the movie to be over.
I think there's a comedy version of this script that exists that lives in the same world as Legally Blonde and those types of movies, where I think, you know, the complete unbelievable trajectory of her career, as depicted in the movie, is the same as the Elle story in Legally Blonde, right?
But in Legally Blonde, we see eventually why Elle is actually very, very good at her job. This one, you're just asked to believe that she's great, and there's nothing she does which convinces me that she's remotely qualified for her job.
And I'm not trying to sell you on that at all. I'm just saying there's a version of this movie that exists in that same universe, because, I mean, I think that may have been a version of the script. There's some production hell going on here. For sure. This themes, it jumps around tonally in lots of ways. I just kind of sat back and was like, this isn't anything other than a comic book version of politics, right? This is an idealized, old fashioned comic book politics. They're not trying to portray the world as it is realistically. The scandals are like signposted from like day one.
Yeah.
I mean, the big twists, about her, you know, family and relationship that, you know, are revelations later on. I was like, I bet. And sure enough, you know, so I'm not trying to defend this as great art. I'm just trying to defend it as kind of an enjoyable movie. It had a Christmas feel to it. It was like, listen, the loveliness to it.
It started off that way. I'll give you that. Like, when the first scene opened and there was someone narrating the movie, that's kind of a very I thought, oh, this is going to be interesting. And then it just turned really weird. And I think, sorry, I'll let me have a go in a second. The thing for me was there was this political story in her political career. And then there was a family story that didn't make sense. And the two never really merged very well. So we were either in the political story or we were in the family story, but it wasn't intertwined enough that it makes a cohesive movie with like an A plot and a B plot, right? There was just this A story and a B story happening.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to sound like...
It didn't make me laugh once.
I smile a few times.
I smiled a lot.
So here's the thing. The holidays are coming up, and one of the things I want to do is one day I want to start watching the first episode of The West Wing and start from the very first episode and try to see how far I get, because I love The West Wing.
Yeah.
Is The West Wing remotely pertinent to the state of politics right now? No, it lives in a far left idealized world.
Yeah.
But within that world, it's so believable. My issue with this, I have no problem with an idealized political world, but even within that world, it doesn't work. And I'll give you an example. Maybe this is a big plot twist, maybe not, but I'm going to say it. Through a series of events, she becomes the governor, okay? And like, she's like, oh my God, I'm governor, blah, blah, blah. And her first day on the job, what does she do? She spends her time with her brother, who is agoraphobic and has had a problem with his girlfriend. She spends the whole day, she's not taking calls, she's showing everybody off. with her brother, who seems honestly perfectly fine to me. He's having some trouble with his girlfriend. What kind of governor does that? Why is that believable?
Yeah.
Because she's human and she cares about family. Oh,
come on. So that to me is like, I'm like, what is going on here? But anyway, I mean, I don't know this actor, Emma McKay. Apparently she's been on some shows. But I think maybe another actor would have grounded this more. Maybe I'm being unfair. I really like Woody Harrelson is here. Rebecca Ferguson is here for like one scene. So for me, it didn't
put the knife down. Yes,
it didn't come out. You know, you put everything in your baking pan, you put it in the oven, and it just came out liquid for me. Sorry.
Yeah, I can wind this one up. Don't waste your time. 2 out of 10.
Oof. Brutal. Yasdeen.
It's outdated. It's a little bit misguided. And it's self-righteous about its own decency, I think, which also kind of annoyed me. Maybe I was in a bad mood. But I think most of all, I was expecting too much. 3 out of 10.
Oof. Wow.
Okay. Using the full scale.
Yeah, it's good. It's good.
I was going to give this a 6, but I'm going to give it a 7 now to balance out your grumpiness. Look, we talk about Hallmark movies a lot.
Yes.
When we describe movies on
there you go.
This is one of those Hallmark made-for-TV type movies. If you keep your expectations in check.
Yeah.
I think there's enjoyment to be had here because it's a very easy watch. So for me, it was going to be a 6, but I'm going to give it a defiant 7. Because
it's harmless. It's very harmless.
I actually enjoyed it, and it's one of those things. If I enjoy a movie, I can't slap it around for its foibles. I genuinely liked it.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's then pivot over to our second movie of the week, which is The Housemaid.
So I will introduce that. Housemaid is directed by Paul Feig. And if you're a lover of movies, then his name should make you perk up. Paul Feig famously directed Bridesmaids. He directed The Heat, that movie with Sandra Bullock and Melissa McCarthy. He did Spy, which I absolutely love with Melissa McCarthy. Yeah. He did A Simple Favor, which is a huge breakout hit.
He did A Simple Favor 2, which was a disaster.
Yes, called Another Simple Favor. And now The Housemaid is his latest film. The Housemaid is based on a series of 3 books, which are very popular with the name. They're all written by Freida McFadden. I have not read any of those books, but the one liner for it is a struggling woman is happy to start over as a housemaid for an affluent elite couple. And as you might imagine, all kinds of mishaps happen. Like I said, it's directed by Paul Feig. It's written by Rebecca Sonnenschein and Freida McFadden, who's the original the writer of the books. And then it has quite a cast. Sydney Sweeney is here. Amanda Seyfried, who we just saw, whom you will be seeing very recently in The Testament of Anne Lee, is here. And then Brendan Sklenner is the male lead. And Brendan Sklenner looked very familiar until I remembered. He was in that 2004 movie called Drop.
2024.
Yeah, yeah.
Drop. And so
that was a thriller.
That was a thriller.
Okay, I haven't seen that one, but that's on my list.
It's an underrated thriller.
Yeah.
It's very good with Megan O'Fahey or whatever her name is.
Very good.
So I'm going to put my teeth back in. By all means, this is a campy kind of a thriller, cat and mouse about who's doing what to whom. Did this work for you guys? Is this A Simple Favor or is it A Simple Favor Part 2?
I'm going to start by saying I love this movie. This is kind of that 90s Fatal Attraction, Basic Instinct type genre. It feels like Nanny Diaries mixed with Hand That Rocks the Cradle with the Stepford Wives. It's just spicy and delicious and dark, and it's really well acted. It has a really long setup. I didn't know what was going on. I didn't know what's the story here? What's the inciting incident? Where are we going to go with this? And then it just goes, and it's such a great ride. I love this movie.
um, Honestly, for a large part of this movie's running time, I wanted to leave. I'll be
really?
Honest. Oh yeah, no. The whole setup of the movie is ridiculously slow. It feels like a different movie. You know how, like, sometimes, you know, I watch sports a lot, right? And you know, every now and then the commentator will say something like, you know, football, well, you know, it's a game of two halves, right? It's kind of a ridiculous thing to say, but you know, the first half doesn't necessarily let you know what the second half is. And that's how I felt about this movie. The first half was like, I had no idea about the story and where it was going. So it really did feel like, you know, some weird fairy tale type situation. And while there was this sense that there was something dark belying it all, the setup was really, really,
really
slow.
Long, yeah.
Like, I mean, to the point where
it takes its time. Yeah.
To the point I was looking at my watch, I was like, I mean, we talk about Hallmark. This is Hallmark. Like, so the reason I'm saying this is because the movie did test my patience. When it became what it became, then it like shifted down two gears, not one. It was like revving at full max, and it was super fun from that point until the end of the movie. But, you know, I did struggle with this initially. Hmm. So I feel like there's a little bit of oddness in the pacing, and maybe the second half is so effective because the pacing is so off on the first part for me. But, you know, I wanted to love this more than I did. And that frustration comes from how slow it began.
Kiasti.
So Pauline Kael used to be for a long, long time, used to be the lead film critic for the New York Times in the 70s, 80s, 90s. And, you know, people keep quoting a lot of things that she had written. And one of her lines, which I always love, is that she famously said, "Movies are so rarely great art that if we cannot appreciate great trash, then we have very little reason to go to them at all." And I think this movie is mighty great trash. I mean, I think, And you stole my notes, because I really do agree. It's the sort of pulpy, lurid, campy thrillers that used to get made with some regularity in the 90s.
Yeah.
But we don't see too much of in the theaters these days. And I also, you know, my pet peeve is that most mainstream films these days are resolutely sexless. They're like, you know, they've turned very Puritan, you know, lest we offend middle America. So I really like...
Oh, yeah,
like,
there's some nipples in this one. Free the nipple. This is a free the nipple movie.
There's many nipples in this movie. But so I like this kind of juicy, silly, campy, but utterly entertaining film. I felt it like it was a big welcome, and it's being released in that Christmas week where Marty Supreme is being released and Testament of Ann Lee is being released and Avatar is being released. These are heavy, serious, weighed down movies. And I think this movie is excellent counter-programming to that, right? It's like, if you want something just silly and goofy. And the one last thing I would say before we say more is, if ever there was a crowd pleaser, this movie is. I mean, I haven't seen the audience react the way they did. Like, people were clapping and laughing and they were like, "Don't go there!" And, you know, "Oh my God!" And, you know, so I think this movie is going to do very well. It's an out and out crowd pleaser.
Yeah, I think for me, the acting really works. All three, you know, leads are just fantastic. And it's just so, it's so spicy and naughty.
I have to disagree with that, because the first part of the movie, the acting was really off for me.
I felt like it was hammy.
Amanda Seyfried, like, do better. Like, I know what that line is. No, I know. I know what that line is for. And I think when you view the entire script in context.
Yes.
But I think, you know, again, I want to really tiptoe around spoilers here.
Yeah.
When you view the entire script in context, then that first part makes a bit more sense. But that wasn't the movie I was watching to start with,
that's
right?
True.
There was a different, completely different tone in that part of the movie. And that's where I couldn't quite tune into what it was being. Because I was like, Amanda Seyfried, you're a better actor than this.
Right.
Like,
but what I'm saying. The first half.
But it's layered.
Yeah. The first half is very much as if they've taken a script from the 90s and redone it, right? Like, it's that kind of hammy Dynasty Dallas type soap opera type acting.
Like, what am I watching?
I know, but that
I had no idea it was Paul Feig either.
Right.
So
it feels off.
So there's a naughtiness that he has.
Yes.
I think had I known it was him, I would have handled it. But
But I also think I don't know how to say this without spoilers, but like the movie Atonement, Do you remember the movie Atonement?
Yes.
Where it seems like somebody's behaving really weirdly and stupidly and unbelievably. And then once the final revelation comes along, you realize, oh, this is why they were behaving that. I think the reason why Amanda Seyfried's in the first half of the movie, she seems weird. But then once you get into the Gone Girl of it, I think how she behaved made sense. So in,
sure.
Right?
Yeah.
So I don't know how to, again, everything twists upon itself. And then when I think back upon it, I'm like, oh, okay, that explains why she was behaving this particular way.
Yeah, same.
Right? So, yeah.
Yeah. I think this is one of those difficult movies where you can't really say too much and we don't want to say much because it will kind of reduce your enjoyment of it. So maybe this is a quick one. But again, this, I wrote down predictions and some of them were right. There are bits that are predictable, but the way we get there is so fun. And I like that it's almost a commentary on female relationships and motherhood again, this whole theme of motherhood and how women judge each other, the standards that they're expected to have and keep. Very interesting. I like that stuff.
I was going to say something, but that's a spoiler, so I won't say it. But I think the whole movie is essentially a cat and mouse between two, maybe three crazy people. And like initially, it seems like they're just trying to out crazy one another. But it kind of pulls the rug from under your feet in the last act of the movie. And I think even that is a spoiler. You know, I like, oh, by the way, don't take grandma to this movie. Don't take little kids to it.
Yes.
Even the language is pretty strong. They use the C word a lot in this movie, which I was surprised.
Yeah.
But you know, it looks great. It's kind of, you know, I don't know. It's pulpy and campy and it wants to surprise you and shock you. And it really goes overboard with that sometimes even. I really was giggling and laughing. We had a kind of unfortunate experience while watching this movie. But despite that, you know, I kind of came away kind of giggling at this movie. So if I have to sum this up, this is an 8 out of 10 for me because we don't see these kinds of movies too much. They're either relegated to, you know, like some streaming service or we kind of frown upon these lowbrow movies. So I like that. You know, it's being released in the theaters around Christmas time. And it's just, you know, people say, oh, movies are not fun anymore. I think this is a fun film.
Same what Yazdi said. Really thrilling and fun to play the what's going to happen next game in your head. 8 out of 10 for me as well.
And despite my comments, I'm going to give this an 8 as well. Ooh. Right. So again, I think, and the only reason for that is you forced me to give Ella Mackay a 7, and this is definitely better than Ella Mackay.
Yes.
That's why it gets the extra point today. Look, I mean, it's not a good movie, but it's a very enjoyable one. And I think, you know, it's, and I say it's not a good movie in its entirety. It's a very frustrating watch. But I left with a big smile on my face and, yeah, so just super fun. And yeah, I agree, Yazdi. My blood pressure was a little raised by, unfortunately, people consistently continue to talk through movies. If you're one of those people and you listen to the podcast, shame on you. But honestly, it's a really frustrating thing, for any of us movie fans. So, you know.
And I think this is such a crowd pleaser, especially in its last act, that I can see how people can get very excited about it. But the issue we had was with somebody who was just talking the entire time through the movie, and it kind of ruined the movie for us. But that, regardless, I hope this movie does well. I hope this movie, you know, becomes like A Simple Favor, where it kind of catches on as this, you know, campy movie. And maybe we'll get a bad sequel by Paul Feig to The Housemaid.
Yeah, Paul
Housemaid
Feig.
Housemaid 2.
Yeah, goodness me. Paul Feig, don't make sequels.
Yes.
All right. Well,
and good wardrobe. Everybody, like the male lead, I wanted some of his clothes.
Yeah, he was really interesting.
Yeah, yeah. He has a lot of a fine line to walk.
I didn't quite buy
the turn there, but anyway, yeah.
Okay. Well, I predicted it.
Did you?
Yeah. Here, look. I did not. It's in my notes.
Okay.
Right. Probably said more than we should.
Yeah.
But Thank you once again for listening. Again, I hope that our audio quality came through. If not, I will return all this equipment.
Thank you, Joe, for setting us up with these camera setup.
We'll see how the podcast sounds. But thank you for listening. We appreciate you as always. I think this is probably our last podcast of the year because A, I think we've run out of movies to review. But B, it is December the 21st and we'll be traveling, Rashmi and I. So, yes, this has been a good year for movies.
It's been an amazing year. And we'll come back in the new year with our top 10s again, like we did last year.
Or top 34.
There's a lot of good films.
There's a lot of good films this year.
Somebody challenged me the other day and said, you know, how many movies in the 2020s are kind of considered, you know, among the greats? And, I always struggle to defend modern movies against things like, you know, classics like, I know, The Godfather or, you know, anything by Hitchcock or whatever. But I mean, I think we live in a golden age.
We do. And in fact, just today, I sent you both something on Instagram. Around the New York Times. Here it is. What's it called? It says, the New York Times recently published its official 100 best movies of the 21st century list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And many of the ones on the list are in the 2020, the 20s. So,
yeah. I don't know. I mean, I understand why people will comment and say things like that. But at the same time, I think, look, it's hard for anything to instantly become a classic.
Yeah.
It takes time for that kudos to kind of, you know, penetrate into the mainstream to say, yes, this does stand up toe to toe against, you know, Gone with the Wind or whatever. But it's just, I think we live in a golden age. I agree, you do.
Yeah. And even sitting right now, I haven't given much thought to it. I think Sinners is an instant classic. I think Marty Supreme is an instant classic. So even, you know, with the myopia of just sitting right now and not having the luxury of, you know, looking at it 10 years down the road, there are some incredible movies which got released this year. And the foreign films were a whole other league.
Oh, they're amazing.
Yeah. Whole other league.
Maybe we could do a whole episode on foreign movies. Yeah.
And not that I'm some great big, sayer of truths, but I'm predicting that, you know, usually, we have the best foreign film category and, you know, all the foreign films get there. And then that's it. That's where the foreign films show up. I'm willing to bet this year, even just the best film category is going to have a lot of foreign films. I think the acting categories are going to have people from foreign films.
Yeah.
I think that the screenplay is going to have a lot of foreign films. So we'll see.
Yeah. Should be good.
Agree.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you again for listening. We'll be back in 2026. 2026, my goodness.
I know.
Isn't that the future? Thank you for being with us this year and look forward to more great movies next year. As always, we'll do a rundown of when the Oscars, I think that's like 20th of January, I think they released the nom. So we'll be back for at least that and give you our thoughts. Hopefully there's some gems. Distribution is such that there's always something that comes up on the Oscars list that we haven't really touched. So,
and we'll do the Muggies as well.
Oh, yeah.
And 2025 or 2026 Muggies. Yes, indeed. All right. Until next time. It's too many movies, too little time. A goodbye from me.
And me.
And me as well.